So I'm a bacteriologist. The beauty of bacteria is you do an experiment. You go home and do what you want to do. And they're so fast that by the next morning they've already given you an answer. And that's not like plants or horses or anything else. And I wish I could get the bacteria to do the talking. But we'll go for it. And I teach in a class of 190, mostly freshmen. And the idea is that there are some neat things to do and might as well solve world-class problems. And you can't just solve one, unfortunately. You're facing all of them at once, or many of them at once. And so we have some friends here who work with me, and the secret to science is find smarter people than you are, and that's pretty easy for me, and it works out. And that's a bacterium. It should be called Einsteinium, because it's probably the smartest dude in the world. It has 3,000 genes, but it only turns on 300. How does it know? Which ones does it know? It's like one of those thermos bottles. How's it know whether to be hot or the cold or this or that? You know? And they're fascinating creatures. And these genes didn't just stick with the bacteria. As higher and higher, so-called higher organisms came along, they have mostly bacterial genes in them. So they have 3,000 to 4,000 open reading frames. Only 10% of the genes are expressed. The whole book of biochemistry was written by these very fast bacteria. And they donated genes at will to higher organisms. And they have huge implications. And they're going to be around for a long time, I think. And the beauty is they can stretch your imagination. And we'll go to that. So I was at this school at Berkeley, and I loaded all these bacteria, 200 characters for each bacterium, 200 bacteria, into a computer. And the data was so big, the largest computer in the world at that time could only take 1/4 of my data. So I had all these data cards. And we got it in eventually. And it was called, Let the Computer Do the Talking. Don't speak ex cathedra, like maybe Darwin did or somebody, about how nature works. Look at nature. Learn from nature. We're going to give you a dozen examples of how if we look at nature, it broadens up our views. And maybe we can solve problems. So I was hired because we had a wet year here in 1975 and 6, and there was a bacterial disease. And I had written that thesis on bacteria, so they tried me out and brought me out here. And I knew a lot, and I knew I could solve this problem. So I knew how to kill the bacteria. So if they were on seed, I could use something in shampoo or copper or something to kill the bacteria. These yellow things are the bacteria. And so I went up to where they had the problem, and I flew up there, and we took a semi-load of seed, and we treated it with copper, and the farmers were all happy, and they planted it, 900 acres. And I was happy, too, and I flew back. 2 weeks later, they called me up and said, didn't work. The bacteria are confluent throughout the field. And so that was humiliating. So I take my Petri dishes up here to prove that they're wrong and they were right. And so I get in an airplane and I circle up. And I'm not flying it, but I'm holding a Petri dish out the window. And if you've ever been in a Cessna in turbulent air, We went up fine. Every 500 feet, I would get a new Petri dish. And then I noticed we got into the clouds, which you aren't supposed to do, I think, unless you have a certain kind of license. And we kept going up until suddenly crystals, ice crystals, were hitting me on the wrist. And I looked at the Petri dishes, and they were getting damaged, too. So when I brought them back, guess what? There were the bacteria in the ice crystals causing what? I don't know. Causing disease. So bacteria fly. And you can't imagine how light they are. Okay? Yes, you can. They're very light. Okay? They go up or down or anywhere. And in one night or two nights, they can grow and make a million bacteria out of one. And so every day, plants are bleeding off bacteria. Okay, and they go up or down, and we came up with an idea. They cause rain. So let's try that out. Because if a bacterium stays up in the air very long, the ultraviolet light will kill it. So maybe they need to get down. I don't know why they went up, but they were light, and maybe they need to get down. And so they cause something called ice nuclei. They come down, they land on plants, and the only bacteria that really do this are plant-born bacteria. And then they get swept up again. So that's kind of like a cycle. And I like cycles because I can actually ride a bicycle. So the idea was these bacteria may hopscotch across a whole nation. And we didn't know that. And we published that, I think, in 1982, and nobody believed it or ignored it. And as you know in science, you know, ignore almost everybody else and worry about yourself. But at some point, data started coming in that suggested maybe we had something going. Enough to get 2 or 3 or 5 or 50 scientists start working on this stuff. And the first thing we know is that our bacterium, and we call it Pseudomonas syringae, but we just call it bacterium Sue. It's a good guy. And we can do that. And it can nucleate ice at a very high temperature, just below freezing, like in your refrigerator. If you have bacteria in there, they could cause things to freeze. Okay? That's fun. So they're the best at it. And you might expect that. They've been around for 400 million years. And they have this little thing on the outside of their cell that is kind of like they invented Xerox. They took 16 amino acids and said, I like those. And so they made 48 in a row of 16. 16, 16, 16, 48. And they made a spring like that. And they were on the surface of the cell, but they only make them when it's cold. I'm not very good with buttons, okay? That's a protein. A protein is like supercalifragilisticexpialidocious, okay? And it lines up perfectly with, this is called water, 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 water. And guess what? These bacteria evolved this. And that protein exists in 3 bacteria that cause ice nucleation and no others. So that's cool. And so some people sequenced and proved that this thing here repeats over and over and over again. And people got into the lab and they never got dirty shoes or mud on their feet. And they made all this stuff. And there's your repeat sequence. And then that guy up there came to MSU as a postdoc. And Cindy came here as a visiting scientist, and the three of us got together and said, let's take this out of the lab. Let's get it into reality. Let's see if we can figure out what's going on here. And so she goes back to France and measures snowfall and looks for ice and ice-nucleating bacteria. And she found that they are in the snow, and they go 160 feet down into the soil. And then they come out, and they go down a river. And if you irrigate them, you have the bacteria. And you have the bacteria whether they're good or bad. And then people got really fancy and made nice pictures of that ice nucleation protein. And beautiful stuff. And I look at it this way. The pink stuff is protein. And these things, you thought they were eggs, but they're water molecules. And they're on the surface. Why on the surface of the bacterium? That's where the ice is. And so if you take rain, or if you swipe a leaf and take a little water with it, and you put it on a cold, cold plate here, like -5 degrees centigrade, and you can see where the bacteria cause ice nucleation. I like that. And there you are. See? Did this one freeze? Not yet, but that one did. And so you can count how many of these ice nuclei are in rainfall or snow or sweat or anywhere. And what's neat is that the higher you go, if you're a pilot, you know, it gets colder and colder. There's some law about that, too. Anyway, at -2, our guys start working. The other guys can't start working yet. So these are highly evolved organisms. And I like them. But I grew up in Arizona. We had Indians. They had rain dances. All over the world, people have ceremonies, maybe even sacrifice people on top of a pyramid, anything to get rain. Well, that's all anthropocentric, or maybe religious. But maybe we should have looked at nature. Maybe late nature, if it has a problem, it solves it. Okay? And it has millions of years to do so. And it can make really nice proteins. And, oh my gosh, I think we're on to something. So, Brent Krisneren decided to work on this. And he has three ski resorts there, one over here at Bridger. And he got these big insulated boxes, and he put them at the top of each gondola. And the guy at the top would take a sterile shovel and put the snow into the box. And every day when it snowed, he'd put some in. And then at the end of the year, when the end of the snow season, we would melt down the snow and get water. And we would say, are there ice nucleators now in that water? And the answer was, yes. And if we add something that kills bacteria, the answer was no. And so we decided bacteria cause rain. And bacteria cause snow, at least on these four situations. Where else in the world? I don't know. Okay. So 70% of the ice nucleation ability was stopped by lysozyme, which knocks out the cell walls of bacteria. So we published that. Actually, we sat at a Taco Bell restaurant at the Denver airport, and we had all this data. And they were saying, well, let's put it in this journal or that. And I said, well, this is my chance in life. Let's make this sexy enough that bacteria cause rain. And there's certain journals like Science that publish sexy stuff, and they did, okay? And these people at NASA, they've been figuring out that they know where weather comes from. And they can figure that weather comes and goes along here. For 7 days, they can go back, or they can go forward and project. And that's called high split, and you can get that on your computer if you know how to use a computer. And we basically think we know where these bacteria were coming from. After all, there's nothing green out here right now. So where were the green plants? Well, Nevada, maybe Southern California. So, I'm a plant guy. The first thing we needed to know was what plants have these bacteria. 10^6, this is over 1 million per leaf. And this is about 80 bacteria. So, different plants have different amounts. What's really interesting is we looked at 100 barley, and we found they varied from 130 to almost 1 million. All the plants look the same. That's barley. And we didn't realize that when we plant barley, we're capable of producing either very few bacteria or a lot. So we went to a place called Syria, where they had 100 varieties of wheat. And don't ask about Syria anymore. But while we were there, we found that Al-Sharaq produces about 1,000 bacteria. And down here, Gali 2 produces almost 1 million. And so these are all elite varieties of wheat. It's very easy to change the variety of wheat. And then we showed that if you put the bacteria on the seed, it moves right up to the top of the plant and gets on the seed again. So once you have established these bacteria, let's hope you establish the right ones. The ones that maybe nucleate rain. And gosh, there's problems in Syria, for instance. And there's problems here. We get drought about every third year. We get drought. And if you graze animals and they eat off all the grass, what's our Sioux going to do? So we're part of a big ecosystem. Bacteria only part of it. And they were an unknown part of this problem. And what do we do? Okay. I don't know. Do we suddenly decide that we can change the world? Or maybe we decide we've been changing the world all along and not knowing it. So we looked at all these bacteria. We said, well, if we look at 1,000, we should be able to find the perfect one. We should find one that kills all the fungi on the leaf and nucleates ice at -4 or -5 and does all that thing. And if you put it on the seed, it goes to the top of the plant. And there are problems with these bacteria. They don't like it too hot. So causing rain for them is going to have to be kind of a cool thing. About 72, 73, 74 degrees, they start fading out. But here are the bacteria, and this is a fungus, and you can see, like a rust fungus on a leaf, that there are different sizes of zones. I like #1 up there. It's producing a natural antibiotic. I hope it doesn't cause cancer or something. So, basically, if we look at enough bacteria, we can find some strong ice nucleators that establish on plants, not just wheat or barley, but almost any crop. And meteorologists are starting to look at this. And now when we publish in the meteorological journal, wow, a lot of people read it. Because their models aren't very good at predicting rain. And maybe This is the abominable snowman that they hadn't expected. Okay, maybe these bacteria are what do it. So we looked at just a bunch of leaves, and we'd start with 10 bacteria, and we would put 10 bacteria on the leaf, and we would follow them up, and our computer would predict one line, and the bacteria would do almost the same, and basically in 40 days you can go to 1 million bacteria. So things seem to fit. So at a density of only 10 to the 4, that's 10,000 bacteria on a leaf, how many do you get from an acre? And it's, you get 1 million, and that's a lot. So the math appears to be something we can deal with. And then there's drought. And drought is a human issue problem. Drought's something that your field can end up, or your lake can end up looking like this. And in 2012, Texas had it really bad. In Texas, they fly CO2 or silver iodide or things trying to get rain. This is a different way to get rain. Grow the right crop. So, I don't know. Maybe I'm no better than one of those Native Americans dancing, trying to cause rain. And I know that there is a history of hundreds of people, charlatan-type people, saying they can cause rain and make money in the process. I expect all of you to leave at least a penny in a hat out there for me. But if we look at NASA, NASA said, let's look at the last 5 years and anywhere that has had serious drought for all 5 years in Africa, look at it. Oh my gosh. And that's a grazing situation. They graze animals there. Australia there. So we got this really smart guy in Australia, and he's been working on ice nucleation, and he said that with all his computer models, the only way he can explain that once you get a heavy rain, why is it for 22 days you get more rain? And he couldn't explain it physically, but he could explain it biologically. So he was waiting around for 50 years for us. And these are his models up there where you get positive feedback that once it rains, the bacteria start growing and you get more rain. So Cindy mapped the western United States. I think she has it all done now, the whole United States. And she uses this model of feedback, rainfall feedback. Red means no, and blue means yes. And that tells us that maybe in certain places this is working, and in certain places this is not working. And so she then boiled that map down to make it easier to see. And you can see that in Ennis, Montana, we have a nucleation site. So we can go there and study it and see what's going on. And we have California. Ugh. We have jokes about California. And the weather comes from the west. And it hits a little ridge of mountains here called the coastal range. And then it goes across that great big valley called the Central Valley. And then it hits the Sierra Nevadas. And that's a adiabatic compression, which is a fancy word for the weather can't get past those mountains, so it dumps. And then it rains. And then it dumps snow. And that's on a good year there, and that's on a bad year. And guess which way the water flows? Back to the west. And so you get a cycle, like your washing machine. And you could see that if you had the right crops in Central California, whoo, maybe they wouldn't have to fight for the water because they look at it as a zero-sum game. Either you get it or I get it. And I'm saying, wait, I don't play zero-sum games. So, find the appropriate launch site, get the right crop, listen to all the people that say you're going to play God or you're going to play with nature. And I say, yes, and we already are. And track the bacteria, put them on seed, and then if it doesn't work, we hire NASA to explain again why a launch failed. But that's science. We do experiments. And that's drought. Now, so we handle drought. Now let's go after the other ones. Because, as I told my class, you can't be a one-trick pony because things are too complicated. So this is a chicken. And that's an egg. And we have a trick question. Which came first? The chicken, the egg, the DNA, or amino acids? So this is called the DNA code, which you probably had in the third grade. Are you old enough? Fourth grade? Okay, well, it's a triplet code. But I sometimes play scientists, and I say, we didn't always have a triplet code. We had a solitary unit code. And if you look at that, what amino acids are made? Valine, isoleucine, and leucine. And if you put them in the jar, they make little footballs called micelles. Wow. Because if you had DNA first, there was no way to protect it. But if you had these amino acids, which occur naturally, chemically, and they polymerize and you get little footballs, then you can store your DNA and then you can start life. And these are the three amino acids that seem to be the ones. And they are the first ones in the triplet code. So, I love amino acids. Everybody talks about DNA. How many of you went to the library in the last week? Raise your hand. Ooh, that's a lot. How many of you went down to the machine tool industry every day, or at least in the last week? None of you. But I think machine tools are more important than DNA. DNA to me is a library. It's a storage of owner manual. But the real work is done in the engine of a car. Or the wheels, okay? The real work is done by amino acids. And so we started working and developed sourdough bacteria that ferment bread and double the nutrition of the bread. Instead of one part per million lysine, they make 3,200. Okay, and we make all this stuff, and this is the word, nutrition, not yield. Nutrition. Nutrition is a space problem, isn't it? How are we going to feed those people for 2 years when they go to Mars? Okay. So we made all these things, and these are all products that you can get out in Montana and even nationally and even internationally. There is the lady, Fatima, making bread. We took bacteria out of her sourdough starter, and it was making one part per million lysine, and we put it back in, making 3,200 parts per million lysine. That's easier than changing 4,000 varieties of wheat. And here's disease. You learn from nature. We walk over to Ethiopia, where barley was grown for 8,000 years, and you can see stone walls that are 8,000 years old with barley growing inside. And you think, let's look at that barley. It's tall, short, early, late. And we ask the lady, where did you get your barley? And she looks at me like I'm from New York City or something and says, from my grandmother, of course. Can you believe that 8,000 years of grandmothers could be wrong? I don't think so. They have dengue fever, Rift Valley fever, Zika, Ebola, Sands fever, probably, all kinds of fevers, and they survived. And we took one of those barleys and we squeezed the juice out of the leaf. And then we put the juice on with 300 green bacteria, and we let them grow. And they were green because they had a virus in them. But when they got near the juice, they turned white. And so you have this stuff called antibiotic resistance. And I think you've heard it. How many of you had penicillin in the last week? You got me. Okay. Well, these little viruses and bacteria carry genes for resistance. So we're trying to kill bacteria? Wrong. Don't kill the bacteria. Get rid of the plasmids, the viruses. So that's another project we have. And there's your plasmid sitting right up there, a little piece of DNA. And you can, if we had time, we'd go over that. I think I'm going to write a Gates grant on that in the next day or two. So, let's go for malnutrition or hunger, poverty. So, this is a field, not all that uncommon in Africa, in Kenya. And that's maize. And they're lucky to get 4 or 5 ears of corn out of that. And this is what they get. And this is what they should get. Imagine that guy. And 85% of the farmers are women. Imagine what they think. They have to feed their children. So I worked on how to kill weeds, because when I looked at the money, about $100 million is spent on stopping plant diseases, bacteria, stuff. 10 times as much is spent on killing weeds. So I thought, there's more money in that. Let's go after that. So how can we kill the very parasitic weed that attacks these plants here and not use Roundup? Because I once cost Monsanto $32 million. So obviously, there's Striga. Pretty little lavender flower or red flower. And they attack rice, corn, millet, sorghum, sugar cane, all those staple crops they grow there. And what do they cause? Anywhere from 20 to up to 90% yield loss. So if you plant, imagine not knowing what you're going to get. And if we could solve that problem, that would be 8 million tons of extra food. And there's a good book. And it talks about how these women will starve themselves for 3 months so they can send their kids to school. We can't have that. At least I can't have that. It's a good book to read. And then this is the one where people are always trying to nail me, and I've gotten used to it. I'm an innovator, and that's all there is to it. And I'm going to innovate away. So we go out, we get these corn plots, and we find a disease that attacks the terrible parasitic weed called Striga, and we test it in research plots, and my brother and I put up the money. He put up a little bit more than I did, but it was a lot for us, and it worked. And then Bill and Melinda came in and gave us a year and a half to prove it. And what we did is we found that no fungus is going to kill a weed and kill it all. Because what would it do for the next year? So fungi like to take about 40%. That's a good real estate commission, something like that. And we want our fungi to kill. And Roundup kills. And if you look at how Roundup kills, it kills right there at the red star. But you don't need Roundup to kill. There's natural amino acids that'll do the same thing. And so we got fungi that make those amino acids. And they kill like serial killers, like something on television. This is called nepotism. This is my daughter. She works with me. She is a program manager type. She went over with me to Africa on the Gates Project. She started the Toothpick Project. Why? Because she said the easiest way to get a farmer to use this is to give them something they're familiar with. So we put the fungus that kills the weed on a toothpick. And all the farmer has to do, and this is she, is boil some rice, throw in the toothpick, wait 3 days, let the rice turn yucky, kind of orange, and plant that with the corn. And when you plant that with the corn, the fungus is in fungal heaven. And it comes out, and it kills the striga. And this is called data. And we have a line here that's a one-to-one data. If nothing worked, all these black dots would be on the line. That says what we were trying to say is that if they get 3 months more food by just using a toothpick, they'll be back. And they're back. And they like this. And so Claire is now going to 12 countries. And instead of giving me any money, you can see the Toothpick Project and maybe help for 8 more countries. But that's what we do, is we solve problems. Okay? They're world-class problems. We don't just stay in the lab. You can fall in love with DNA. You can fall in love with proteins. But to get out and get something really working in the field, that's what it's about. And if you look back at that slide, you'll see the problem here is that these farmers were doing a lot better when they used the fungus, but they were still only making maybe 5 sacks of grain, 90 kilogram sacks, and that's not good enough. And so there's something else wrong at the left end of that graph. And what we think it is soil deficiency. And here's one example of soil deficiency. If you have a lot of money and you have 80 acres, you can do the entire atomic table on a wheat field. And look what happens when you add zinc to a place where they've been growing wheat for 8,000 years. That's soil deficiency. The other thing about it is that Bill Walsh showed that in his prisoners who were in solitary, their copper level was here and their zinc level was down here. So when you add zinc, 72% got over their violence. Don't tell me that in the Middle East, oh, and by the way, where is this a problem? Afghanistan, Pakistan, Syria, Iran, Iraq, and Turkey. Pay attention to data. Read books. Try to figure out what world-class problems are about. Here we have a bunch of seeds, and we're still working on this, and they're mutant seeds that are missing the gene for either boron uptake or manganese uptake or molybdenum uptake. And when you plant that in the soil in a farm costs 50 cents. You can assay the soil, and you don't need a $40 to $100 soil test, and you can do it right on your farm. So, we got some new projects. We just wrote a grant, Plants for Space. How are we going to feed those people for 2 years' journey so we can grow up these plants in 7 to 10 days? They're called microgreens, and they're high in omega-3, and we can make them really good, and let's hope we get the grant. And this we could call a StuBot or a student robot, but what we have here is a machine that can print seed. Furthermore, it can print grafted seed. grafted seed are cool because you can have a rootstock for resistance and a top stock so you can get nice Cavendish bananas. And then this one, we love potatoes, but these are low glycemic. People with diabetes can eat these and not get that sugar rush. And we have a bunch of other projects. So you go find a smart kid, and you send her in to the lab. We'll take care of it. Okay? There are some smart kids. In Chile, did all the microgreen work. She did the soil assay. She's now at UC Davis. He's at Mayo Clinic. She's up there. She got a doctorate at Berkeley. She got a doctorate at Boston University. He teaches doctors. And somebody, I guess we could read this poem. When the sun goes down and the various birds streak across the sky, destination bound for some safe haven, and Venus pokes her face through the twilight, I try to take some time to see if my effort made a difference. Not complying with zero sum. I want intellectual progeny, a finer kind of question, and important for a finer kind of answer, not diluted by generation, not reduced to consensus trends of the day, but true brilliance, outshining Venus herself, emerging from a cold, this cold, and windswept valley. And you can be a tennis player and maybe both.